Welcome to The Art of Growth and our Instincts season, where we are going through the subtypes of each type. So 27 in all. This week is the type 9s. We've had the self-preservational 9, the sexual 9, and this is the social 9 panel. To remind ourselves of the terminology, the subtype is your dominant instinct combined with your dominant type, which is why this is the social 9 type podcast. We are also discussing the sequence of the instincts in each of these episodes, how we relate to, which is a good way to describe it, our relationship to each of the instincts, our dominant, which we tend to overuse, our neutral, which we just tend to use, and then our repressed, neglected, or resisted, which we tend to underuse and need to develop a bit more. So to find out your instinctual sequence, you can go to www.theartofgrowth.org, take our instincts test. It's free on the front page, and that will help you figure some of that out. So we hope you are enjoying this season, and of course, you can reach out to us if you have questions or you're interested in coaching for yourself or your organization. But for now, let's get into it with this panel of social nines.
All right, well, welcome to the Social 9 podcast. I am so excited to have each and every one of you with us. We are looking this season at the instincts, and we're going through each type and through each instinct of all the types. And so this has been quite an endeavor. And the reason we're doing that is because each type actually does not have a pure expression of itself. It is mediated through the dominant instinct. And that is the reason why nines look different from one to the next. And that's what we hope to be able to show and also explain a little bit more for all of our growth and understanding. So let's begin by, first of all, having each of you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Hi, I'm Becca. I am in Seattle right now.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm from Texas.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm from Virginia.
Okay, welcome. And I am just dying to jump into this because social nines are sometimes called the countertype of the nine. And yet there's still the drive for comfort, for peace, for harmony that functions within the type. And then it changes a little bit through the social sphere. And that's what we want to look at. So look at the first aspect of the social instinct, which is reading and interpreting. So talk to me about how your need for comfort, for peace, for harmony shows up through that part of the instinct, through reading and interpreting. Talk to me about what you're doing, what you're looking for. I'd love to hear more about that.
So when I looked at this aspect of the social instinct, I actually went back into my childhood, just because maybe that's where I'm doing a lot of my work right now. My childhood is like this gaping void. Like, I don't remember so much about it. And so I'm doing a lot of work there. But when I was looking at younger me, one of the things that I saw was I had this constant sense of not feeling like I fit in. And I desperately wanted to fix that. And the only way I could figure out how to fix it was to become kind of a student of what was going on around me. How are people behaving? How is my behavior different from theirs? You know, just like really kind of just trying to take it all in. And, you know, kind of with the goal of like making myself better able to fit in with the group. And it just kind of developed like a big part of who I am. And so I still catch myself doing that to this day. Like if I'm in a new place or with new people, I catch myself like, you know, there you are. You're like, instead of just being present and being yourself, you're watching to see what's going on around you before you just, you know, just show up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's really interesting. I definitely relate to that from a childhood perspective. I see it playing out now kind of in group situations where people maybe aren't cooperating with the group. I'll kind of see myself getting frustrated internally and trying to like, kind of like influence people to behave more cooperatively in a group setting. And if they don't, I kind of get flustered and feel like almost threatened.
What do you mean by threatened?
Yeah, I was going to ask that same question. Like, how does that show up?
It's kind of like threatened as in like, the group dynamic might be too chaotic, or it's not like we're not going to be like a cohesive unit if someone's not like playing their part, kind of. So it's kind of like a need to have like unity in a group situation.
This is very helpful because it helps me to understand how peace manifests through the social sphere. Your peace manifests through, like, if the group is at peace, then I'm experiencing peace as well.
Totally. Yeah, because I can have like my world flipping upside down, but as long as everyone around me is like feeling good and like we're all together, it's fine.
Wow.
Yeah, that really gave a great distinction, I think, between some of the social types we've been hearing, where the aid is like, how is the group having their impact, having that, is the group have a mission? The nine is the more of the group kind of getting along. The one mm-hmm. was like, is the group doing the right thing? Are they? And so it's really interesting how you just nuance that. And I think that was very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. I laugh because it is so different from one type to the next. And yet it's still in the same sphere.
Right.
Karen, you were nodding your head up and down.
All of it. Yes. Totally can relate. You know, this one, for whatever reason, what popped up for me first was thinking about a few years back, sitting in a room where I knew I was going into a conflictual situation. So it was a meeting of people that were getting ready to deal with trying to talk about some hard stuff. What ended up happening in the meeting was we kind of went over it and passed it and brought in some new energy. And I was so uncomfortable in the meeting because of the discomfort around watching people's body language, watching faces, knowing what was going on inside of me, that I was shivering. Like I had a physical, visceral reaction. And I said nothing. I just let, like looking back on it, I just kind of let it play out and thought, well, the authority in the group is moving the conversation this way. So I guess this is what we're going to do. But now looking back, I think it was a big aha for me that it plays out in my body as a physical sensation.
Okay, let's go there. This is so fascinating because as a body type, you're a nine, you're a body type, even in the social sphere, which tends to be more like observing what's happening in the nebulous world of people, it's still, it comes back and it impacts your body. Is that, I'd love to hear from the other two. What's that like for you? Do you feel it in your body? You feel it elsewhere?
I so relate to what you said about shivering. I'm like, I laughed when you said that because I get this, like, it really is like a shiver. Like if I'm like super frustrated or I feel like an energy surge in me, which doesn't really happen very often. So if I'm feeling like uncomfortable or like charged, I do get that like shiver. And it's like kind of in your, it actually is like in your core, like in your gut kind of. So I totally relate to that. It's funny hearing someone else say that.
Tammy, you're nodding your head up and down. Is that true somewhat for you as well?
I don't experience it as much as a shiver, but more of like a clenching in the gut.
So the feature of the nine, being you're looking for comfort, peace, happens for you when the group is at peace. One of the things you said that was interesting to me at one point, Becca, was when I'd asked you about conflict, do you avoid conflict? And this was in our typing interview a long time ago. The interesting thing was you answered it differently than I expected. And your response was, no, it doesn't. It's not like it troubles me the way I would, something like that. I'm putting words in your mouth, but there was this sort of like, no, that's not the problem. And then I have a problem if it's a conflict with me, but not when there's necessarily a conflict in the group, because I feel like I can solve that. I'd like you to say it in your words. Is that true for social nines in general? I'm curious.
Yeah, I definitely like engage in conflict. I actually feel like I have a skill of conflict resolution, and it doesn't bother me to engage in conflict as long as I'm not the one who is responsible for the conflict. Mm. So like if I have to confront someone about something that's bothering me that they did to me, like a personal issue, then it's hard because that's like, oh, well, maybe I'm gonna like break our relationship because of something that I feel like maybe I deserve. Like, I don't know, say someone does something to me, hurts me, and I'm like, well, I can just deal with it because I don't want to like hurt our relationship by bringing this up. But if someone, if my friend was like, so-and-so did something to me, I would say, well, that's worth going through that conflict with them. And I could go with them through the conflict. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
100%. First of all, there's this definite screening process. Like, is this conflict worth, is the potential outcome worth what I have to go through to engage in this conflict? But one of my great loves is running support groups. And sometimes conflict comes up because people have different points of view. And I feel very comfortable in that aspect, just because like Becca said, it's not about me and I can use skills that I know that I have to almost kind of like be almost like a conductor, bring this person in and, sensing like what's going on with that person and bringing that out and pulling it all together somehow. But if it was aimed in my direction, it's a podcast. You can't see me like crumbling up into my little ball.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Karen, what about you?
Yeah, I definitely relate to both. It's certainly, I don't want to disappoint people in the end. So maybe it's about broken relationship, but it really is about wanting for people to really be pleased with me or just okay with me. It's not, I don't have to be elevated. I don't have to be great. I just don't want to be the problem. But yeah, as far as groups, yeah, I don't mind the conflict. In fact, I think, especially if there's like kind of a, I don't know, tension or crisis situation, my son went off a diving board into the pool, dislocated his shoulder. It was absolute chaos for like an hour while we waited for someone to come help. And I think in those times, I'm very peaceful. Like everything is very calm. I can handle the tension, you know, inside everything's going a little crazy, but I am able to really do it in a calm, thoughtful manner. It doesn't mean I'm not exhausted afterwards.
Yeah. It's so interesting how it's so much more comfortable for you to deal with these external challenges, these the conflicts that are happening outside. But when it happens to you, or you're the cause of it, then it's like, oh no, I can't go there. Mm-hmm. But that's where the social piece plays itself out in sort of a different way with the nine, in that you have more confidence in the social sphere because you have that as your dominant instinct. And so we see that, and that makes a difference between, say, a social nine versus other nines. Let's talk about the next aspect underneath the social instinct. So you have the reading and interpreting as the first. The second is bonding and affiliating. And the bonding and affiliating is that energy that goes out and looks to make sure, check in with people. How are you doing? What's happening? And it's those quick touches oftentimes. They don't have to be extensively long or really deep, but those quick touches that gives a sense of connection, like, okay, we're good. You and I are good. The affiliating has to do with who am I a part of? And am I a part of this group? Are you a part of me? And there's definitely a need for social types to feel like they belong to something. So maybe talk about how comfort, peace, and connection for you show up through that dimension of the instinct. Do you find yourself doing the bonding? Do you find yourself checking in with your group, with people that are in your circle? And how does that serve your need for comfort, peace, and connection?
I definitely find myself doing that. I run a worship team. I'm kind of a co-leader with someone. He's a seven, actually. And he's just like a huge visionary, like always like, what do we do next? Like, how are we going to move this forward? And I'm always like, okay, so-and-so looked a little uncomfortable today and we need to like make sure they're okay and figure out why. And so, yeah, I definitely see that playing out through making sure that people are feeling good and doing well on the worship team. So if people feel like disconnected to me, it's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of chase them down and see how they're doing, you know?
Mm. I just started co-leading a group study, and my partner is a one. The group of women that we're leading, it's kind of like a fusion of two sort of separate groups. And it was just very interesting to see how it played out, because my co-leader, she's, you know, like wanting to know like, okay, this is the time that we need to have this done, and boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, but how are we going to bring everybody together and make them feel connected? Mm-hmm. You know, it was just very interesting to see how, and she kind of laughed at me. She's like, well, that's kind of your thing. I'll leave that to you. Yeah. Yeah. But that was my primary concern was, and maybe because knowing that my one teammate would take care of all of the logistics, but just making sure that everyone felt like they could be heard and like they were all just as important, regardless of like what group they came from, like that they would all feel just as welcome as, you know, as the next person.
Yeah. As someone said to me, that belonging expresses itself for them through the social instinct. Like, I want to feel my sense of belonging in a group. You know, does the group receive me, accept me? Do I fit here? And so then my attention goes out to see who isn't fitting in and wanting them to fit in and feel that sense of belonging as well.
Yeah, I really resonate. I think this is kind of my default state, bonding and affiliating, connecting with people. It's my go-to in any situation where, whether it's with friends that I know or don't know, I will just look to do one-on-one connection. It's not intimidating to me. It's kind of my comfort zone. Mm. Where I see it probably play out more week to week, I teach ESL, English as a second language, and it certainly has fed me as far as my social nine and how I want to see the world made better. But it's also just being in a classroom, my priority is relationship over everything else and making sure people are heard. And it's the place where I most am self-forgetting, not in a bad way, but in a good way, where I'm not so self-conscious, I guess would be the word.
I love it.
In that space. So
I love it. That expresses the high side of the ability to merge. So for us, we've been saying this for a while. There's high side and low side to every aspect, every feature of every type. And there's nothing bad. And I think sometimes nines can feel like, the whole merging thing, I shouldn't be doing that. It's a bad feature. And it isn't if it's not driven by the compulsion, which of course that happens a lot, right? But there's also the high side, which is your capacity to lose yourself in a good way inside the group and to serve the group, you know, at your best for their good. So I love that. Please talk about that merging piece, Tammy or Becca, on, you know, that part of it, how that works itself through even in the bonding and affiliating.
Well, I don't know that I can point to necessarily positive areas for myself in which the merging applies, but I can definitely speak to the ongoing challenge that I have in that I feel like my group affiliations, of which there are many, are so distracting to me. And I literally lose myself in all of this stuff that I have going on outside my own world. And it really holds me up from being able to move forward in my own life. And trying to figure out, like, you know, I'm at a stage in my life where my youngest reached kindergarten this year. I have four children, and everything kind of got a little quirky because of COVID. But, you know, this was supposed to be my year that I was supposed to launch into my next greatest thing. And I find myself still tending to these groups and all of these things that I've built up in my life. And I'm not able to even get quiet enough to be able to do what is for me very hard work of like, what do I want? Like, where am I going? What do I want to do? Like, and a lot of these things just end up being distractions.
Yeah, Becca.
Totally. Well, I think that the affiliating is very important to me. It's a huge aspect of my relationships. I think when I find that I have something in common with someone else, that feels like it kind of propels my relationship to the next level. It's interesting because my older sister is a four and she's like the opposite of that. She's like, I don't want to have anything in common with people. And I kind of like modeled myself after her growing up. And After learning the Enneagram and doing a lot of self-reflection and stuff, I realized I pretended like I didn't like to have things in common with people. And it was interesting. I was like, that's like so important to me in my relationships. I love having things in common with people. And it kind of just feels like I can do life with people who have like similarities with me. So yeah, I think that's kind of how it plays out for me.
Thank you. I really appreciate, you know, your openness. And Tammy, thank you for being as transparent as that with us. For a lot of nines, the merging, social nines, the merging takes place through the group. And because of that, they can take on the agenda of the group. And that's the way it displays itself. So while they may appear to be, wow, you're like goal-driven, or you're achieving things, you're just constantly busy, and it's the losing of the self inside the group so as to not necessarily do the, you know, the thing that is yours to do. And so I appreciate that transparency. Is that true also for you, Becca, and you, Karen, that you can pick up on the sort of agenda of a group and carry that forth with a little bit more energy than if it was just doing it for yourself?
Definitely.
Yes, completely.
Sometimes I don't even know what I want. Like, actually, this year, this is why I said at the beginning, the pandemic has been kind of good for me, because it kind of created enough space where I was physically not able to go anywhere. So I felt like I wasn't, like, there wasn't as much motion in my life. So I could kind of focus on what I needed and what I wanted. And I realized, like, it is so hard for me to figure out what I want. And it was probably one of the more difficult things that I had to do, is deciding like the priorities in my life and what I wanted to pursue. And like Tammy said, like choosing which groups to tend to and letting those groups that aren't serving you go is like really hard. So it's like makes you have to rethink your whole self. It's very scary.
Yeah.
Well said.
In a lot of ways, like, I know how it feels to be left out. I mean, how devastating it is to me. And so when you said that bit of, Becca, about like choosing which groups to let go, it feels like I'm leaving someone out. I'm disconnecting. I'm disconnecting them from me, which is the thing that I desperately don't want to have done to me. So it's just hard.
I completely relate to both of those. And it's funny to hear you both talk about groups, like the many groups. Like, that is absolutely, I don't know how I end up in so many groups. I honestly don't. And people will see me as being, that's where I didn't feel like I was a nine for a while.
Sure.
I thought, wait a minute, I'm super busy. I'm super active. I do not take naps. I don't like naps, actually. And so you get involved in these groups, and I find that they're so motivating to me, and they're so much a part of creating like just a better world. And then I often feel like they all have great purpose, that it seems like maybe I've lost my own purpose in that. I'm not always sure. I don't know. I just, the merging piece is absolutely true until it starts to get to a point. And I think with anything where I'm going, wait a minute, is this what I signed up for? Was this why I was so excited about this to start with? And Tammy, I totally resonate. I think you said it too, Becca, when letting go of a group is, yeah, one of the hardest things. And just the language of that, just the idea that it feels like I'm having to, let them go. I'm disappointing them. When I actually go ahead and put my voice out there and say, this is why I need to step away, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can honor that. There's no emotion from the other side. Usually I've built up a whole story in my head about how bad it's going to be before I do it.
Yeah.
And,
that's so true.
You did the same. You built up a story, Becca. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, I believe it too. Like, my husband he's super black and white, and he's just like, why were you thinking all of those things? Like, you just revved yourself up about this for no reason. And yeah, he's a really great person to bounce things off of, because he's super just like, he's a one too. So it's just like, boom, 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 easy. And I'm like, so do you think that I should do this easily? And he's like, yeah, totally. Mm. Just, they won't care. I'm like, but all of these things, their emotions and their this and that. And it's just, it's a lot.
This is where the nine can overplay their negative impact on the world and underplay their positive impact on the world. And that shows through there where it's, if I leave, then it's a disastrous effect. So yeah, I really appreciate that. Let's talk about the neutral. This could be interesting to help us too in terms of how do you grow? So, you know, is more integration of the other instincts, the more we grow. Which one happens to be your second, the neutral one, the one that doesn't create as many problems for you? And tell me how you use it.
I can go first. I consider my neutral or my supporting instinct to be the sexual or one-to-one instinct. And this is another area in which I think I had a hard time identifying myself as a nine, understanding how the social instinct, that was number one, but understanding the role that sexual plays in my, just how I do things, that made a big difference for me too, because, you know, as a leader, I do actually like to push boundaries sometimes. And, you know, and a lot of it, I think, comes from that nineness of just not like, I don't like being told what to do. And so a little bit of that is stubbornness, but, you know, if I'm being given like a certain set of directives, I will sometimes try to change them up or push them, but only when I feel very comfortable doing so.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's always that caveat, and I tend to definitely back down if there's a lot of assertive energy in the room. Mm-hmm. But if I'm comfortable and the assertives aren't there or they're quiet, then I'll like lean in. Be like, can we do this differently?
Huh. Do you feel like the sexual energy then gives you a little bit of that? I'm willing to push a little bit. I'm willing to, where do you think that comes from? The ability to push that and make changes despite your tendency towards comfort?
Because I'll have a vision for what I feel like the group can be in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so it's still all like for the group, but it's in addition to wanting to make sure everybody's happy and comfortable and together, like where else can we take this? Where else can we take this for the benefit of the people who are here?
Hmm. Okay. Karen.
Yeah, I definitely, the risk-taking piece for me shows up when someone's being excluded. It can be in a really small, like you're standing in a group and I would step across the circle of a people to move someone's shoulders, to turn them, to allow someone else to be in the circle. Like that's a simple way, right? But to step out and move across the room and actually physically move someone might be a little uncomfortable. But in that situation, I just feel more concerned about the person that's out than about being uncomfortable. But on more of a like a macro scale, just when it comes to social justice issues, what's going on with immigration or just about anything. I feel like there's so much going on in the world that it almost, that's where I get kind of lost in what is mine to do, is trying to figure out who am I going to care about? What is mine to do and which group can I impact change? But I do see those situations as I watch other friends who will say, how can you do that? Or how can you stand out in front of a building or protest or hold signs or support someone that you believe in and be willing to kind of cross what is the norm in where we live, especially where I'm coming from. I probably don't hold the dominant opinion, but I don't have an issue with standing out. It feels like the right thing to do. So it definitely is a risk-taking area for me that feels, I feel very connected to, and it doesn't feel like an effort.
Hmm. This is what makes the social nine in many regards. I mean, just despite the second instinct in the order, makes the nine, the social nine, sometimes look not like a nine, that you can do that, that you can stand out there with picket signs and that you can hold a non-dominant view and actually have a measure of energy in that, like pushing it forward comes from sort of picking up. It seems like this is what this group that I belong to values. This is what I value, I think, but I'm inside this group and this is what we value. And I'm kind of, driven or pushed or encouraged by that energy from the group to move forward. So yeah, that's a really good, I appreciate you giving that illustration. That's a good visual. Becca, what about you?
As far as my secondary instinct, it's really hard for me to say, honestly. At first I thought I was a sexual nine, just because of like the literature that I read and everything. So I don't know. It's hard for me to say, but I definitely relate to what Karen said about like, if it's something that I feel very passionate about and it's like an instinctual passion, then I'm like super confident and I will put myself out there, especially, and also kind of like what Tammy was saying, like, in a group setting where there's like an alpha, usually I'll kind of just be secondary. But if the alpha is doing something that's like inappropriate or harming others, I will be like, boom, in there challenging them. So I don't know, because I also have the self-preservation like tendencies of like, making my home nice and making sure that my finances are in order and everything. But at the same time, I think my motivation for doing those self-preservation things is more group oriented. So that's like, it's still like self-preservation is playing out. The tendencies are playing out towards the group, not necessarily towards myself, because I actually like don't care about myself enough at all. So yeah, I think that self-preservation might be my repressed. So I would be willing to guess that sexual is my secondary.
Let's talk about the neglected, the third. And that's the one that does tend to, or aspects of it do tend to be problematic for us. And so talk about that. How has it created? So three questions. One, which one is it? Which seems to be self-preservation for the three of you. But talk about that and talk about how it has caused problems for you, or in what way has it caused problems for you, and how have you grown through it, or how are you trying to grow through it? So talk about those three.
Well, I kind of mentioned this earlier about how the pandemic propelled me into this like season of self-care. I think what I realized is that I really trip myself up by not taking action for myself. I'm in school right now. I'm finishing in June, and it's kind of like go time, like crunch time, you know? And I would find myself kind of like being on the periphery of what I was actually supposed to be doing. And it would kind of jolt me and I would be like, okay, you're not going to do well in school if you don't like engage in what you're actually doing. And so I kind of had to face the reality of me not caring about what I should be caring about. Does that make sense? So the things that are good for me to do, I kind of like half think about them. And I know that they're there, but I kind of like let them just kind of be in the background. And so, yeah, I had to kind of practice doing, like actually taking action in self-care, I guess. It's a very like vague thing. It's still kind of like a cloud in my head. I don't really know how to describe it, but yeah, it's definitely the thing that affects me most. Having the self-preservation repressed, it's like all of my problems stem from me not taking care of myself. So
I think in terms of when you think of self-preservation, thinking those three aspects as well, the health and wellness, the resources, having enough, managing it. And the third one being
home, domestic.
Domestic, the very thing you just said, Becca, the house, that you do take care of that. It's not that we won't have anything in any of those three. You may have one, but it still can be the one that creates problems for you. So talk to me about that. What problems does it cause for you? And what ways are you growing through it? So Tammy or Karen?
So health and wellness is the one where I struggle with the most. our home's pretty comfortable. It's always been a priority for me. It feels like the safe place. So that was not too hard. We talked about this before in our group with Jim, but I have married to an accountant. So the financial wellness and that piece, I probably merge a little too much. And we work at that as a couple. I take on things just to have some doing in it and some investment in it. And that is, we've learned that over 25 years of marriage. That is a slow work in progress, even still. But the part that was more of an aha for me, I always thought I was pretty healthy. When Becca was saying, I don't really even know what this self-care thing is, I totally relate to that. It seems nebulous. Like, I don't know. I don't know what self-care looks like. And I recently, I've had some digestion issues, which is all this body stuff and void. I'm sure it's all connected to some of the stuff I'm just uncovering about what I'm supposed to be doing at this point in my life. But it turned into something that is autoimmune related. And it's kind of sent me on a path of being sort of forced into dealing with myself and saying, okay, what is going on in here? What I didn't expect is, and I'm grateful for, is I love research. I don't know if that's a nine thing, but I love going deep into something, especially if it's not the thing I'm supposed to be focused on at the time. So yes. Podcasts and books, and I just will go all in on that. So, but it has been a really good thing for me to put aside what I find my social self wants to focus on, which is kind of justice issues. And there's so many books out there right now in theology, and that's an intersection that I'm really interested in. And to push that aside and say, no, actually, I need to look at myself. And so really trying to understand how my body works and working with a nutritionist and a coach, I'm fortunate to be able to do that. And for the first time, I think starting to own it, which for me is, I just, when it came to, I don't know, doctor's visits, exams, everything, I had no idea. When was your last blood test? I would have no idea. And having to actually create a file and take notes and connect my doctors and be self a self-advocate is new for me and really good. And I'm just starting.
Mm. Wow. Thank you. That's really good. Tammy, I saw you nodding your head at one point.
I know. I was like, oh, I need to stop because I find myself kind of like, oh my goodness. And like, I feel so much compassion, Karen, for what you've been going through. But at the same time, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my life. So I apologize if like I was not emoting here on screen exactly what was going on. But so this whole self-preservation thing just kind of makes me laugh. Because I got slammed in the face with the fact that I had a self-preservation problem before I knew what the Enneagram even was, much less the self-preservation instinct. And that was when, a couple things kind of happened more or less around the same time. One was that I was diagnosed with a mental health disorder that did not have any medication or, you know, any known treatment. And so me, who, you know, wore it as like a badge of honor that she didn't take care of herself, you know, had to learn how to do this thing called self-care. And that's when I found out that just the words self-care just like kind of drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Like, oh, please don't say that. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard. Then I'm like, maybe we have a problem here if we, you know, we're feeling so allergic to this whole idea of taking care of ourselves. And then I started to notice that people in my life who, you know, were really, really good about self-care kind of drove me nuts. Like, oh, they're so selfish. You know, they have to go to bed at this time, but, you know, when other people might want to hang out with them or any of these things. And then I realized, again, that I was the one with the problem, not them. And I had to do something about it. So that's why it kind of makes me laugh, because I'm like, oh boy, this is where we get to get really kind of like not so good in my personal history. But one of the things that I've had to learn, and Karen, you use the word like becoming your own advocate. that really, that's it right there. And that's, I think, really hard for nines in general. And especially if you do like repress this self-preservation instinct, it almost seems antithetical, like to just like the way that I do life. I do have to say, though, on a bright note, I'm very proud. I mentioned earlier that I have four kids, and I kind of tell people that one of the greatest gifts that I have, you know, getting into the idea of like resources and practical know-how, of which I really don't have much. But one of the greatest gifts I've given my four kids is the fact that they've had to learn to do things because their mother doesn't know.
That's fantastic. So, you raised them by not raising them. Just good parenting advice.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good, teach them to be self-learners, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So.
No, we just spin it and do it that way. And say
so
it that
they've
way.
They've had the opportunity to benefit from the area in which I am most challenged.
Yeah. I still love how you've explained that, how you describe what's going on with you, and that self-care feels very selfish, and that the in this sense, you know, the social and the sexual instinct do not help the nine. It helps the nine actually be even more nine-ish in some respects by, mm-hmm. by not taking care of yourself and your priorities. So in some senses, this is what's fascinating about the instinct. In some senses, it counteracts the type. In some cases, it actually enhances or enables parts of the type that aren't working real well. And so, yeah, the self-care is a tough thing. Even for self-pres nines, interestingly enough, it's like self-pres nines learning how to take care of the self in a healthy way as opposed to in a way to narcotize, you know, to dim the lights a little bit so as not to feel as much. And so the little that you're doing there is like to be celebrated. The little that each of you are doing in the area of self-care is to be celebrated because of how much work it takes to do, you know, to do that kind of work. So I just want to say, you know, a huge thanks to, you know, to you for being so open, transparent, and sharing some deep insights and helping us to understand more about the nine and the dominant instinct, the social aspect of the nine. So deep appreciation from me for being on this podcast and for sharing with us. Thank you.
Absolutely. What you gave us is a gift of insight into understanding people that we love that are like you, who see the world from this perspective. And so it is an absolute gift of your time that you're giving to a lot of people so that they can better love those around them. And so thank you so, so much. It's amazing to have all of you. And we will talk to you again. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So thanks again for joining us this week. Huge props to all of you who are keeping up with all of these episodes and diving into this learning with us. Your friends, family, coworkers will thank you because you will expand in your capacity to relate to them and understand them and to understand yourself, as we talk about in our group coaching, where we spend a whole month on these stages of self-knowledge and self-observation and transformational habits. This is an important part of developing that knowledge piece so that you can develop the self-observation piece where you see yourself being yourself in real time. So well done for digging in and diving deep. If you're interested in having us work with your organization to do some coaching training so that your team can work together more efficiently and enjoyably, please reach out to us at www.theartofgrowth.org and you can set up an exploration call with Suzanne to learn about that. If you want clarity around your type, you can set up a discovery session with Joel or I, which is a 90-minute session where we ask you questions and get to know you through your story and then show you how your type is showing up in your story and what your next steps will look like. Like I said before, if you don't know your instincts and your instinctual sequence, take the test that's at www.theartofgrowth.org. And that'll do it for this week. So, my friends, may you go and engage that social energy. May you know that you are in a network and that you are resourced by the connections that you have. May you hit that ultimate growth point of making a contribution beyond yourself, of wanting to be a part of something much bigger than yourself. Do the work in you so that it can happen through you. And we will see you on the next one. Grace and growth, my friends.